Delighted to introduce Sophie Howe, Future Generations Commissioner for Wales, who's chairing this final session. Thanks, Sophie.
Thanks, Auriel, and great to be with you this afternoon. I hear you've had lots of interesting discussion and debate throughout the day. So thank you very much to IWA for putting on this event. So we'll crack on then. Our session is talking about putting sustainability into practice, which from my perspective is hugely, hugely important because we have this framework of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, which of course puts, you know, on statute these legal obligations around sustainable development. But the big question is, how do we actually, on the ground, for various practitioners, from, you know, your local authorities to your health boards to your private sector to your third sector, actually make that real? And I'm really pleased that we've got some really high quality speakers on the panel today who have been doing exactly that. I'll wait, and I know a fair bit about the work that Sally's been doing, but I'll leave it to her to introduce you when she arrives. But I'm going to ask Mary to kick off, just saying a couple of minutes about the work that you're doing in Cynwyl Cymru, supporting various organisations to put sustainability into practice. And then I'm going to pick up with Chris, who's going to do the same from the perspective of his work and his organisation, and then I'm going to open it up to questions from the floor, if that's okay. So, Mary.
Thanks, Sophie. Cynwyl Cymru is the national charity for sustainable development in Wales. We were a spin-out from the Welsh Government about 15 years ago. And 2 years ago, our work with the Welsh Government formally ended, which has enabled us to become a small and flexible charity that now can embed all the learning we've had over the last 15 years into practical projects that we're doing with our members. So because the formal relationship ended and we needed to become a innovative organisation to survive in these difficult financial times, we established a membership base, and we now exist to support those members. And what we do to embed sustainability on a practical level, everything we do is within the context of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. And everything we do is to underpin Wales becoming a sustainable nation. So we work with our members on an individual basis to find out what they need, what their projects or plans for making their own organisations more sustainable. And then we support them. So we work from working with Principality Stadium to helping them move forward their agenda of becoming an energy island, to helping Dŵr Cymru do a deep dive into a community. So we work in a very different way with all of our members, but it's all delivering sustainability at a practical level.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, Chris.
Good afternoon, Chris Joffe from ARUP. I'm our Global Buildings Retrofit Leader, which means my focus is on taking existing buildings and making them work harder, making them work better, making them more valuable, healthier, lower energy consumption, and so on. In recent years in the UK, my focus has been on the residential stock. We've got 28 million buildings, homes in the UK. They guzzle nearly a third of all the energy we consume in the UK and are therefore responsible for nearly a third of the greenhouse gas emissions. We need to do something about that at scale. Successive government programmes haven't really begun to scratch the surface of that problem, so the team I've been leading has been working hard on what we do about that problem and taking those ideas to government.
Thank you. Okay. So, I know that very many of you will be wanting to get to the nitty-gritty of, okay, so we've got these big and bold ideas, we've got big and bold legislation, how do we actually put that into practice when we're met with various challenges of perhaps short-term thinking, short-term policymaking, short-term budgeting, and, you know, perhaps having people not necessarily in the right space in terms of thinking about the sort of public value of what they're doing and thinking across the social, economic, environmental, and cultural well-being of Wales. So, does anyone want to kick off with an initial question to the panel? Oh, you're all shy.
Quite hard because we haven't.
So you all know how to put sustainability into practice. Then that's marvellous. We can all go home. Brilliant.
Suggested that Welsh Energy Government could actually bring forward three eco-city projects in Wales, a charity come to like one school, a primary or secondary school involving children within the area from 7 to 17, and they would talk to them, counsellors, environmentalists, policy wonks, and work with the children to build within the hall of the school an eco-city, how they would like to live, waste, transport, jobs, healthcare, what they wanted and what they would see. Those children would also go out to every school within their area, bringing in ideas and bringing issues of politics. What is consulting? What is delegation? What is representation? And there could be three eco-city projects every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So all children and young people from 7 to 17, and it was one of the issues of the Assembly Government set up, how do we consult with children? Well, not every child in Wales would be involved, but we probably get about 50%, because my granddaughter knows what's needed in terms of the internet a lot better than I do. And the ideas that they have, the ways they want to connect. And as part of a transport thing I did for Friends of the Earth, when I talked to young people, they came up with the most amazing answers. Like, my dad gets a lot more than twice what I do, so why do I have to pay half of what he would on a bus? And children and young people see the world differently. Their imaginations are better. Their understanding of what is going to happen is better. And I think, like I said, three eco-city projects in different parts of Wales and do them every 10 years, getting involved 50% of our children and young people. And I'm asking you again, it wouldn't cost that much in terms of if there's 50 billion or 50 million, 1 million to involve half the children of Wales now, making sure that anybody else can contribute.
Okay, thank you. So you've got some specific ideas there about how you might go about doing that, but I guess the broader principle is the extent to which we involve people in decisions which affect them, and particularly, I guess we're talking, you know, the subject that we've been talking about for the rest of the day is around infrastructure, the extent to which some of the major infrastructure projects that we've perhaps seen in Wales over the years have actually connected back to the people that they're supposed to be delivering for, how well they understand or reflect the lived experiences of those people. So, Mary or Chris, any experiences that you've got of that kind of involvement, engagement, actually forming how we take work forward?
Not specifically on that area, but we've been quite pleasantly surprised over the last couple of years. We run the Sustain Wales Award, and one of the categories is for schools, and I think not at that scale, but on a very local scale, there's a huge amount schools are now doing to address sustainability, come up with sustainability ideas, working with the local organisations. And I think that the work that Size of Wales are doing, we work in partnership with people who work with education. I think there's a huge amount going on. What we could benefit from in Wales potentially is joining it up a bit more, but we're starting now to identify some of these projects and excellent work like the Rainscape project in Llanelli, where you have the school children working with the Dŵr Cymru engineers to identify where to lay the sort of reed beds and everything for the project. It's building tomorrow's engineers as well as solving a real problem today. So I think there's a huge amount going on in education. I think, yeah, we do need to bring it together and maybe have some ambitious projects like that as well.
Chris, anything you want to say about, I mean, yes, as a private sector company, I guess, you know, who are, you know, developing a range of different infrastructure programmes and working on them, the extent to which you see your role as involving people and understanding, you know, what motivates them, what their lives are like and how we can deliver best for them?
Well, I was actually going to answer the question as a parent of children. Rather than as a representative of the private sector. I think it is a good idea to engage with them. I think it's a good idea for quite a few reasons. One, you want young people to grow up with a stake in the future and a feeling that they have a duty to take part in public life. I think that's terribly important. I think it's important to give them, to help them understand that the future isn't certain, it's not cast in stone, they can make a difference. If you just look at the built environment, for every building that you see, there were probably 10 that were designed that didn't get built. you know, if Christopher Wren hadn't won the competition for St Paul's, St Paul's would be a quite different building. But we think it was always going to be St Paul's. So I think the future's ours to make, and if youngsters can understand that, rather than that it's inevitably going this way or that, I think that's important. And finally, I think it's a good idea because they come up with ideas which, as adults, we are too inhibited to come up with. We know too much sometimes, and they don't know certain things are impossible, the way the Victorian engineers didn't know that certain things were impossible, and they just went ahead and did them. So I think it's a very good idea.
Do we have any other questions along those themes, or any other...
Thank you. I'm interested in the idea of retrofitting, particularly in relation to our ageing housing stock in Wales and the fact that it's very energy inefficient. From an international perspective, Chris, have you seen any examples of where governments or local authorities have used housing regeneration and retrofitting to provide other benefits to the community as well as sort of sustainability and improving in energy efficiency?
Yes, there's examples all over the world, including at home, because it tends to involve small local firms, and so it's very good for employment. It has tremendous health benefits, and you see it in the UK, you've seen it in Wales with the Arbed and Nest programmes, you've seen it in France, in the Netherlands, in Germany, in the USA, all over. Whenever retrofit is done at sufficient scale, at least on an area basis, you get tremendous benefits across the piece.
Does anyone else want to pick up on that, or no?
Just Mary? To say as well, there was a news piece last night in which One Wales was part of designing 10 years ago a retrofit of a house, and the best I think way we can get these messages across is by the people, and the woman who now lives in the house said that the difference that particular project has made to her daughter, who had asthma, who now has no health problems, and to her pocket. So it's seeing it from that side as well. But I think if we're going to have retrofitting models wider going forward, we need to look at financing them as well. And I think there's organisations in Wales, including the Principality Building Society, that are now looking at ways of financing retrofits and new builds. They're not new technologies anymore that we need to worry about if they're going to work or not. I think there should be a movement because builders say that there is no demand, but there's often no finance for people to have the choice. So I think it's getting all of our ducks lined up, and I think the money needs to be there for people to be able to afford some of these projects that aren't obviously in RSLs. So I think now there is a movement and we will see more, but we have got excellent examples in this country that we just need to duplicate.
And Chris, I wanted to ask, do you have any examples of the sort of decision-making process, I guess, that would be coming from policymakers and, you know, politicians in the public sector around mapping out that multiple benefits that we were just talking about there in terms of retrofitting? Because if you analyse the cost savings to the NHS from, you know, decreasing respiratory disease, from, you know, older people going into hospital through cold, if you looked across at, you know, the economic benefits through, you know, creation of local jobs, so on and so on, the decrease in the amount of maintenance you'd have to do on housing stock and so on, you'd start painting quite a different picture of where you might be investing money on one, you know, type of infrastructure, in that case retrofitting, than perhaps another. Do you have any examples of that?
Yes. Short answer to that. Yes, there's been quite a few studies. A few years ago, Cambridge Econometrics with Verco did a big study on the benefits to the UK of a large-scale residential retrofit program, and they quantified those quite well. Even if Treasury paid for it all, they'd get their money back with interest and some. Huge benefits to health. Cold homes cost the NHS in Wales about £175 million a year, dealing with the illnesses that are either created or made worse by people not being able to heat their homes. Frontier Economics have just released an update on the Cambridge Econometrics report that just came out yesterday that says very much the same thing. Another group did a study for the Climate Change Commission about 18 months ago, and they reached the same conclusion as well. So the benefits are very widespread. They range from energy security at one end to fewer people on benefits at the other, and everything in between. So it's hard to think of a programme of activity that could better deliver against the objectives of the Future Generations Act. It ticks every single box.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Aims, it might be better if you're a bit well known. And I was going to ask your opinion on whether there's a case for the well-being of the Future Generations Act having a rebranding to something like Brexit, you know, two syllables instead of 13.
Yeah, well, the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act covers everything in terms of all policy areas. It covers, you know, all parts of the population and sections of the population and policy areas now and everyone who isn't born yet. So every issue, and Brexit is obviously the, you know, a big, huge issue which we're all trying to sort of navigate through, is clearly an issue that could be considered within the context of the legislation. There's various processes that are taking place now that public bodies have to follow in terms of thinking about the how they apply the legislation, and that's from the approach that the Welsh Government will take in terms of Brexit. That's how we might take forward our city deals, a range of different things. So, the Act, you know,
no,
comes within it all.
Point. Brexit is something
Well, you know, I guess if we go back to the challenges of, you know, 20 years on from devolution and how many people understand that, the Welsh Health Secretary is the Welsh Health Secretary rather than the English Health Secretary. This piece of legislation is 18 months into existence. I'm afraid I don't have the powers to change its name in statute. What would you propose that it was called? Ah, right, okay.
No.
Okay, there was someone over here who wants to ask a question.
For Glandua Cymru, we tend to look after fairly old infrastructure rather than the new stuff. I'm probably asking a question that you've begged already with your previous statement on the answer that was coming from Chris as well. We've been talking a lot today about new infrastructure and building new things, but Chris was picking up that we're not actually maintaining the infrastructure that we have got at the moment. And also, there's been a lot of talk about foundational economies and how you create jobs and activities within where people live, rather than moving them to places where the jobs are at the moment. Reading the analysis of the current wellbeing plans, it's clear that there's quite a big cultural shift to be had from being used to doing what we've always done and measuring what we've always measured to actually changing the way we think and what we measure. I suppose the questions are the models we're using to take decisions actually driving us to make the right decisions, and are we actually measuring the right things if we're worried about the future and future outcomes? And a supplementary to that, if we shift spend from curing to prevention, that could be quite a difficult message to get across. So how do we get that across to the public so that our politicians have confidence to take some really tough decisions over the next coming years with a fixed or a shrinking budget?
Okay. Do you want to...
Yeah, just briefly on that. We're involved in a very experimental and exciting project at the moment with Welsh Water, where they're trying to turn the way they work on infrastructure projects on its head. So where they're having to go into an area and do some remedial work, they're now looking at how they can engage the community and ask that particular community, a very narrow community, geographically confined to the project, what they need, what their areas of vulnerability are, and what they want to get themselves out of that position. Job creation could be on the back of it, but it's not imposing something on a community, it's working with that community and letting them identify their own issues. So while they're going in and doing this remedial work, it's engaging them on a wider agenda, and it's really inclusive. We're doing it in collaboration with all the people who are working on the ground in that area, working with the third sector, the local authority, the PSB, and getting them to identify who the real the problems and the areas and the people we need to speak to on the ground, so we can identify the true voices coming up and not impose things top down. So I think there is an acknowledgement now that we've been doing things the wrong way around for a long time, and we need to find out ways of turning them around and finding benefits for people in communities. And this is an experiment, but I think even if it doesn't work out the way we hope, we'll have learned a lot along the way to see what we can apply. And as was said this morning, it's not it could be a blueprint for the future, but not applying that model to every area in Wales that they go around, but taking learning from it and applying it to the other areas then they have to work in.
I think we also need to de-risk retrofit for politicians, because we want them to take some brave long-term decisions and then stick to them, and so we need to de-politicise it as well. I think the development of a Welsh Infrastructure Commission, I don't think I've got the name quite right, but that body anyway, offers politicians a certain let out in that it can recommend a long-term strategy, which I hope it will, for energy efficiency in buildings, and then the politicians can refer back to that and say, but they advised that this was the right thing to do. And then the commission can also hold the politicians to account that they do deliver it. So I think there's a strong political component to it, but it starts with taking the risk out of it so that they can make some brave long-term decisions.
I think, from my perspective, the answers to most of your questions are no. Do we have the right performance measures and so on in place? No. Do we have the right models for taking decisions? Well, not across the board. I think, you know, there are some areas where we're starting to see some improvements there. On measuring of performance, I think we're, you know, the cultural change which this Act requires is a process and not an event, isn't it? And, you know, all of the evidence and work that I've read around that is that cultural change takes at least 3 years to start, you know, being embedded. It's more difficult when the rest of the system isn't aligning with what you're trying to achieve. And I think we still are in that territory with the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. So if you take the health service, for example, the government requires the health service to set an integrated medium-term financial plan, which is 3 years. The Wellbeing of Future Generations Act requires us to be looking to the next generation, so 25 years. The performance measures by which they are performance managed and resources are allocated are based on waiting times, you know, A&E, operation waiting times, and so on and so on. And that's not really directing us towards the longer term and preventative action that we need to take. So the system at, you know, a multiplicity of levels needs to start shifting. What we're seeing through the work that I'm doing is some shoots of, you know, green shoots kind of emerging within that. If Sally was here, she would be telling you about how she used the Act as a framework to give her permission to challenge the status quo. Some of the things that they did in Public Health Wales was to go through a procurement exercise for new office accommodation, and instead of procuring on the basis of lowest cost, they actually built in, using the Act as a framework, the social, economic, environmental and cultural values into that procurement exercise and came out with quite a different result. So I think there are very many people across the public sector who are telling me that they are using the Act to sort of challenge the system. What we need is for the system itself and the bureaucracy within it to start supporting those people who are trying to drive that change. But I think that's going to be a, you know, at least a medium term, if not, you know, a long term process. Well, that's an interesting and controversial one. My view, which I'm sure you're aware of, is that the government haven't followed the Future Generations Act in the way in which they've assessed the need for the M4. That evidence is in the public inquiry. Who knows what the recommendations from the plan inspector will be from that? There's a process that's being gone through. From my perspective, what it has triggered in terms of a change is a working relationship that's going on between myself and transport officials in Welsh Government to review the WellTag guidance, which is the guidance which the criteria by which transport appraisals take place. Their previous guidance didn't embed the Future Generations Act. It was based on an old model of sustainability. The new guidance will embed the Future Generations Act. It's, you know, we've been doing some work with Transport for Wales in terms of the metro system, who are again using the Act to inform their framework for the procurement of the new metro system. So who knows what will happen with the M4, but I think the important thing is that we learn from perhaps where we might not be getting things absolutely right in terms of the thinking that goes into a decision-making process, and that we aim to put that right for, you know, projects in the future.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a question about the Act, actually. But, it, you know, anybody can answer it. For me, the Act is about a way of thinking and behaving differently, ultimately, and as a piece of legislation. Is this on? Yeah, good. The question is really, is the Act too public sector focused as it stands at the moment? Because if it's to succeed, we do need that public-private partnership and those sectors working better together, you know, collaboratively rather than transactionally, which tends to be the case at the moment. I think my fear is that if we start to get into a position where the public sector is dishing out tenders to the private sector to do things and just saying, you know, that classic line, and how will you achieve the requirements of the Act in doing this, then we've all failed. And I mean, we've all collectively failed, not just the public sector. So any thoughts?
We're obviously a third sector organisation, and we feel it's everyone in Wales' responsibility to work towards this Act, because it's in everyone's benefits. And what we're finding is our members, we've got 130 members in the private sector in Wales, they're all voluntarily working towards the Act and embedding some of the rules that are imposed on the public sector organisations to their own organisations. And not just to make sure they win tenders and they have a competitive edge in the future, they're doing it because they know it's the right thing to do. And I think it's something that we all have to take responsibility for now. And as Sophie mentioned, it gives us permission to do that. So I think it is obviously focused on the public sector, but I think there's a lot of people buying into this now as a new way of working.
I think you're dead right. It is very heavily public sector focused, but I think that's appropriate for Wales, because Wales is a very public sector dominated society. I think the main thing is it's there, it sets down, if you like, the direction of travel, and it gives us all a challenge to rise to. You're absolutely right. If the tender just says comply and give us your ideas, that's not very good, but I think we can do better than that.
Perhaps I can come in as well. I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, the requirement around collaboration in the Act is not just about public sector bodies collaborating with other public sector bodies, it's about collaborating more broadly. I think that often the private sector have got much better ideas than the public sector and broader experience in terms of how to actually implement those ideas. I know I was, I'm looking at Emma from Constructing Excellence Wales. I know that there are a number of really good examples where that early dialogue has taken place in construction terms with whichever public body is, you know, procuring or tendering for something, and the contractors, and they've actually ended up with a much better product at the end, where you build into that, and this is an absolute requirement, you know, the actual people who are the end users of that, people in communities, people in the schools, you know, whatever it might be, you get an even better product at the end of it. So I don't think, I mean, the reasons why it's the 44 public bodies that are covered under the legislation is quite simply around devolved competencies, and, you know, the Welsh Government, the Welsh Assembly don't have competency to apply the Act elsewhere. Of all of the private sector organisations that I've spoken to, none of them say, you know, that this Act is, you know, something that we can't kind of agree with, because, you know, what's not to like when we're looking at how we spend public money and do things on behalf of current and future generations in a way which gets a kind of win-win-win approach. And I think the best way to do that is by working in partnership with others. Okay. Jeremy?
The issue really is it's a great piece of legislation, and, you know, we all know it's unique to Wales, and we're all very proud of that. I think the issue really, having been in the funding session just before this one, and hearing the comments there, was whether it's going to actually scare off potential investment in projects in Wales, because obviously it's one of those sort of imponderables in some ways, and I think it has to be scoped out if it is very much part of the procurement process, and literally, you know, it has to be spelled out, because otherwise, if there is any ambiguity about it, then effectively the private sector will look at it and go, whoa. So obviously I'm looking at it on the basis that of certainty, because I know what funders look for ultimately if they want to actually back any schemes. And obviously funding is going to become very, very important in Wales for various projects going forward.
Just to answer that from my point of view, I don't think it will scare off funders who are interested in investing in large-scale residential energy efficiency. There's a European body called the Energy Efficiency Financial Institutions Group, which is about 60 major funders across the UK and mainland Europe, and they produced a report quite recently in which they said, we've got tons of cash and we would love to invest it in residential energy efficiency projects. At the moment, there are too many, across Europe, too many transactional barriers that make it very difficult. But given that residential energy efficiency ticks all the boxes of the Future Generations Act, I would see that as something which would encourage them to come to Wales and spend money, not discourage them.
I feel that there's an opportunity to change the way we procure now as well. It's given us permission to do things differently. We held an event a couple of weeks ago on procurement around the Act. And I think in the session I was in earlier as well, there's an opportunity to work more collaboratively. And a lot of the structures we have in place for procurement at the moment inhibit that. There's a lot of things that block us working in the way that we want to work. So I think it's now an opportunity maybe to start again and work in a better, more collaborative way.
Just finally to pick up on the point, I mean, I actually think that if the government are doing this right, then it has the potential to provide some, you know, security and clarity that the private sector actually want and need. In very many ways, I think the private sector are far better at the public sector than at doing that long-term planning and forecasting, quite simply because you need to be assured that you're going to be in the best position to survive in 10, 20 years' time when things are changing and moving, and you need to be preparing for those things in advance. If we have a government who is also in that position, who are planning and preparing for the future, I think that that creates, you know, better conditions for the private sector to operate in rather than worse.
Chris, question related to something you said earlier, and I don't wish to misquote you, but I believe you said that it would be important for politicians to take brave and long-term decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are two adjectives I wouldn't have applied to politicians, they are brave and people who take long-term decisions. So in terms of where you are now, what might politicians do which would not be regarded as brave and not would be require the long term, but something that people can see here, today, now? Because in the session that I attended, and indeed was, you know, part of the panel on, what we were talking about in part was, we could have held this 20 years ago, and we would have said the selfsame things that we've said today. So I think what we need to do is to deliver immediately real benefits such that we can then be brave in recognizing that there would be possibilities for the future. And just as a supplement to that, in terms of Jeremy's question, why would people invest in this? It seemed to me that you identified a number of factors by which there are real financial benefits now that if publicized more broadly, people could, you know, pursue. I'm sorry if that was long, but that's it.
That's fine. I'll start with the classic phrase, I'm glad you asked me that, because I'd hope that would come up. I think bear with me, this will be a bit lengthy. I think there are six immediate things that Welsh Government could do at fairly low risk. The first is probably the hardest. Everybody's probably here aware of the Arbed and Nest programmes in Wales, which are aimed at tackling fuel poverty, and they're exemplary in many ways. But since Welsh Government has been had a statutory duty to deal with fuel poverty in Wales, fuel poverty has increased. We now have more than ever. And at the current rate at which it's being tackled, it will take 40 years to eliminate. So the first thing is to seriously ramp up our bed and nest. That will cost something like 1% of what Welsh Government puts out every year in terms of spending for things. So that would be a big budget shift for them, would require a bit of courage, but given the benefits that would flow from that, I think that would be substantial. Wales is full of small and medium and micro enterprises, and they are often the first port of call for people who want energy efficiency advice. So, certainly in my case, I go to the guy who fixes my boiler to ask him about heat pumps and PV and things like that. And the repair, maintenance, and improvement market in Wales is worth about £1 billion a year. If half of that was spent on energy efficiency, that would be about 75,000 homes a year. So Welsh Government could do things to inform those small companies and to help them work to deliver those goals. So that's another one. Planning guidance, I think, is another one. Quite a lot of the things you do to improve the energy efficiency of homes has the potential to dramatically change the distinctive character of neighbourhoods. The Netherlands have tackled this by pre-approving certain ranges of solutions. So you want to have certain solutions already approved. You don't have to go through planning because you know they'll be accepted. That's another one. There's tons of experience around the UK of retrofit projects at scale from local authorities, housing associations, devolved administrations. I think Wales could do the whole UK a service by hosting a series of workshops where we get the people together who've done those and said what worked and what didn't, what's best practice, how do we deploy that in Wales. I've mentioned the energy efficiency financial institutions group. I think we should get them over to Wales and start discussions about how do we configure these projects so that they're attractive and easy for you to invest in. I think that's really important. And as the sixth and actually the first step, we like task and finish groups in Wales, at least Welsh Government likes them. I think they ought to appoint one that reports to the Ministerial Decarbonisation Task and Finish Group, which is tasked with coming back very quickly with saying, right, how do we achieve a step change in the rate at which Wales is improving its homes?
Well, if I could speak on behalf of everyone present, I think we would support all six. And it's remiss of all of us when we return to our normal day jobs tomorrow not to support all six of them. So I wish you great success.
Thank you very much. I am going to see Leslie Griffiths in about 2 weeks and I hope to be persuasive. I'll increase that number. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. So I'm Athyr Emyr, Welsh Government, but until recently on secondment to the Swansea Bay City Region. And given the title of this afternoon's session is Putting Sustainability into Practice, I mean, the legislative framework, the policy framework, is groundbreaking in Wales, arguably in terms of the economic agenda that can flow from that, where we're not quite on the same page, but we do have a major project on the blocks, signed off at the high level by the First Minister and the Prime Minister. It's one of the major projects in the Swansea Bay City deal, and that's Holmes's power stations. And it seems to me that we need to apply some national focus to some of these regional initiatives. There is a first stage housing project in Neath Port Talbot, which should be on site early next year. And this is about delivering carbon positive housing at scale. So we have an opportunity to lead in the economic delivery and the creation of new industries based on sustainable development. You agree with everything you've been saying. And Professor Phil Jones of Cardiff University played a huge role in developing some of these projects in West Wales, but it seems even in a small country like Wales, there isn't sufficient awareness of some major initiatives that potentially could be scaled up, not just Wales-wide, but UK-wide, very quickly and transform the housing construction sector very quickly if we get on with it.
Can I absolutely support what you've said there? I think the approach that Swansea City Deal is taking in terms of the kind of three pillars that you're looking at, so connectivity, energy, and health and well-being, I think are incredibly exciting from a Future Generations Act perspective, because to me that's, you know, embedding the you know, those principles of the Act. My team have been working with some of your team around a framework for using the Act in your decision making. And I'm really pleased about that engagement that we've had. In terms of the homes as power stations, I couldn't agree more. And I think that you know, what is, it's really exciting that it's getting off the ground now. It's a little disappointing that it's taken really this long. Yesterday I was in London with a scientist, a physicist who, from Imperial College, who is seen as one of the cutting edge up-and-coming scientists globally. And she said she travels all over the world to speak at various conferences, but actually the thing she's most excited about is something that she's seen in Neath Port Talbot, which was the Salsa House and the technology that's built around that.
My point, we're brilliant at building one Salsa House, we're at 60,000.
Absolutely. So, you know, she said that off, you know, completely kind of cold off the bat, I'm most excited about what I've seen. Of all the places I've travelled in the world, I'm most excited about what I've seen there and the potential that that brings. And, you know, we have the capacity to do this. We are doing this. We've just got to move it up to scale. So I think there's some real opportunities around the city deal. And I think that, you know, we all need to show, and government need to show some real leadership around driving that forward. Gentlemen by here. Yes, and then I'm going to close it to questions because we need to wrap up.
I'm sorry, it's actually going back to the M4. You say that the Future Generations Act hasn't been taken into account. Obviously, we are where we are today with respect to the M4 as a result of decisions which have been made by politicians. The politicians have, there's an army of advisers which are actually two categories. They're those for the Welsh Government, and there are those for members, assembly members that are not in the government, but they have an independent, well, not independent, but a separate group of advisers. My question really is to you, how is it you think we've got to this situation? Have the politicians been badly advised, or you know, how have we got to this situation now rather than before to discover, as you say you have, that the Future Generations Act hasn't been really taken into account? Can you comment, please? The reasons, in other words. Yeah.
Okay, so there are some complex issues with the M4, like it's a project that's been in development for the last couple of decades, well before the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act was even conceived. However, the decision-making process, key points of the decision-making process were taking place at the point at which the Act was being developed and the Act was enacted. I guess it goes back to the points that I made earlier on, that this Act is about culture change and it's a process, not an event. So just because there is legislation now passed, it doesn't suddenly mean that everyone's going to start doing what they've done for the last 20 or 30 years differently. There needs to be a wholesale programme of training, mentoring, supporting, shifting the way in which we measure performance, shifting the way in which we budget, changing thinking amongst politicians, some of whom themselves have been there for the last 20 years and so on. And that's not going to happen overnight. So I, you know, in terms of the reasons for this, I think they're complex and varied, but I think the main one is that we are on this kind of, you know, journey towards getting people in the headspace to think about how they need to apply the Future Generations Act, and that's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, in my view, it hasn't happened in terms of the thinking process on the M4.
No, just comment. Yeah.
Well, you know, trying to get things through to 5,000 civil servants and a multitude of other public sector workers across Wales is not going to be a short-term process, is it? So I think that's okay.